Christians face many problems, not just today, but throughout the generations. The church itself faces many problems, and finding the source of these problems sometimes may seem difficult, but I would venture to guess that the majority of our problems stem from attitudes, either our own attitude or the attitudes of someone else who has done things or said things that causes our attitudes to change. I'm sure we have all heard various phrases about attitudes. The definition of attitudes, according to Webster's definition, is a posture taken or a stance to reveal one's opinion or direction. I'm sure you've all heard the phrase, an attitude adjustment. We've even had someone say something like, if he doesn't change his attitude, I'm going to give him an attitude adjustment. We all know what that means. Or you may have had a parent say to a child, after the discipline, I'm going to administer discipline, and perhaps that will change his attitude or her attitude. Sometimes as Christians, we may have a bad attitude towards someone or for something they said or because of something they have done, and therefore we get a bad attitude towards them. Some people just have a bad attitude all the time, all together. No matter what, their attitude seems to be a poor attitude towards worship or towards other Christians or just towards life itself. If you'll turn with me to Acts chapter 5, there's a story of a couple in Acts chapter 5 named Ananias and Sapphira. And you may remember the story, I'm sure you all have. They were part of the first century church, and they had a problem with their attitude. Acts chapter 5, beginning in verse 1 and going through verse 11. But a certain man named Ananias, with Sapphira his wife, sold a possession and kept back part of the price, his wife also being privy to it, and brought a certain part and laid it at the apostles' feet. But Peter said, Ananias, why hath Satan filled thine heart to lie to the Holy Ghost and to keep back part of the price of the land? Whilst it remained, was it not in thine own? And after it was sold, was it not in thine own power? Why hast thou conceived this thing in thine heart? Thou hast not lied unto men, but unto God. And Ananias, hearing these words, fell down and gave up the ghost, and great fear came upon all of them that heard these things. And the young men arose and wound him up and carried him out and buried him. And it was about the space of 3 hours after when his wife, not knowing what was done, came in. And Peter answered unto her, tell me whether ye sold the land for so much. And she said, yea, for so much. Then Peter said unto her, how is it that ye have agreed together to tempt the Spirit of the Lord? Behold, the feet of them which have buried thy husband are at the door and shall carry thee out. Then she fell down straightway at his feet and yielded up the ghost. And the young men came in and found her dead, and carrying her forth, buried her by her husband. And great fear came upon all the church and upon as many as heard these things. Now, if that were to happen today in today's church, I think there was a lot of people that would walk out and say, I'm not going to that church anymore. I don't want to be any part of that. That's a scary, scary thing. The couple had an attitude of giving. However, their attitude was laced with an attitude of greed and covetousness and an attitude of deception. So there's a little bit of a contrast here within their attitude. You think about this. The church is just being established, and many are selling what they have to give to the church. Ananias sells his land. He wants to come and bring the money or give part of it anyway. He could have came in and said, look, I brought some money here. I sold my land. I kept part of the money back. Here's the other part. I want to give this much to the church. And there would have been no problem. But when he said, came in for, this is what I sold my land for, there was a problem there. So they wanted to give to the apostles. We see the Holy Ghost saw through his deception, and he was struck dead instantly. Later, his wife, although the scriptures make it clear that she was part of the deception because she was privy to it, from what we know, she had no idea that their plan had been uncovered. Imagine her attitude as she walked up and claimed that they had indeed received the set amount for the land. And so from what we see about her, we know that Ananias didn't just come in and say, here's some money, I sold my land and here's some money. He basically made it known to them that that's what he sold the price for, the land for that price. Because we see when his wife came out, Peter asked, did you sell it for this amount? he wouldn't have known what amount unless Ananias had said, this is what we sold the land for. And so he gave her a chance to repent and to come clean, yet her attitude was one of greed. Peter had said the money was theirs to do with whatever they wanted. Their sin wasn't the fact that they only gave a portion. Their sin was that they had lied to the Holy Ghost. They were trying to take credit for the whole amount when they only gave a part. It's kind of like taking credit for something that someone else has done. Sometimes that may happen at a job where a person will take credit for somebody else's accomplishments or just in life. And we have to be careful that we don't fall into that. In this case, the husband and wife were co-conspirators. She fell into a trap, so to speak, because she knew her husband had already said they were going to give only a portion. So she, when she came up there and they asked her, she figured, well, I'm sure he already told them this amount, so I'll agree to that amount. And said, yeah, that's how much we sold it for. And she was called out on that. She figured agreeing with the amount that Peter inquired about was just confirming what she was sure her husband had already told them. Another attitude we want to look at is one of a good attitude and a bad attitude in the same passage, John chapter 12. John chapter 12, beginning in verse 1. And here we see, if we turn to this passage in John chapter 12, look at John chapter 12, verses 1 through 6. It says here, then Jesus, 6 days before the Passover, came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, which had been dead, whom he raised from the dead. They made him a supper, and Martha served, but Lazarus was one of them that sat at the table with him. Then took Mary a pound of ointment of spikenard, very costly, and anointed the feet of Jesus, and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the odor of the ointment. Then saith one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, which should betray him. Why was not this ointment sold for 300 pence and given to the poor? This he said, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief and had the bag and bare what was put therein. Have you ever had someone prepare a special meal for you, just for you? Perhaps your family or friends invite you over for a barbecue in your honor for your birthday or for something like that. This is really a cool story because Jesus came to the town of Bethany and there they had prepared him a meal. If you look at the context of it, it says they. It wasn't talking about Lazarus and Martha and Mary. It was talking about they, the people of Bethany that had put this meal together for him. We kind of can gather that, but we're not positive on that. According to context, that's what it looks like happened. But he came and they made him this supper, and sitting there at the table with him is none other than Lazarus, who was raised from the dead. This is a guy that was dead, had been in the grave 3 days, and Jesus raised him from the dead. Now he's sitting at a meal with him across the table from him. That is brought to mention here twice in this passage. So it's interesting there. So I'm really not sure if it had any significance or not, but it's still pretty neat. And again, the inspired writer found it important to put in there. As they sat to eat, Martha was serving, and Mary, it says, anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair. It doesn't take a genius to see the attitude of this woman. She had a very, very loving attitude and a giving attitude. According to BibleVerseStudy.com, I wanted to look up spikenard because it's not something I've ever seen on the shelf at Walmart or anywhere around. It says it's a costly ointment, and I hadn't figured out what it was, so I just wanted to Google it and see what it said. And according to BibleVerseStudy.com, spikenard was a costly oil imported. It was the oil of a plant that only grew in the Himalayan mountains of India. The pound here translated from the Greek litra would have been a Roman pound, which in our measurement would have been about 11.6 ounces. So if you figure a 12-ounce can of soda, 11.6 ounces would be just under that. And so this is the amount. And it says, why couldn't this have been sold for 300 pence? And if you look that up, you'll find that pence would have been, 1 pence would have been a day's wage. And so 300 pence would have been about a year's worth of wage that this can was worth. I mean, a soda can full of this oil, this costly oil. So it was a very costly oil. So if you can imagine saving a year's worth of your wages and buying something for someone else that will only last for the moment, and then it's gone. Almost like if you've ever been to a 4th of July celebration and watched the fireworks, you might as well light your money on fire and watch it burn, because it costs a lot of money for the fireworks and they go and they're done, and everybody goes home, and there's an empty spot in the checkbook where you paid for all the fireworks. Okay, so this kind of is the deal. This oil is going to be used, and it's gone. Once Jesus is anointed, it's going to be gone. So if you can imagine using a whole year's wages to pay for maybe for a surgery or something to save someone's life, we would at least see the benefit of their life being saved. This woman anointed the feet of Jesus with this costly ointment. And not only that, it shows her self-sacrifice as she wiped his feet with her hair. But the attitude doesn't stop there. For within this same passage, we see an attitude of greed and self-righteousness. It says that one of the disciples, the very one which would betray Jesus later, is the one that questioned her actions. Now, there are some passages that you can see that maybe that all of them kind of that were there questioned her, or some others that were there questioned her. But in this passage, all we see is that Judas questioned her actions, thinking that the ointment could have been sold. The money then could have been given to the poor. Unfortunately, the inspired writer says that his attitude wasn't one of caring for the poor, but rather he was greedy. It was that of greed, and it says, because he was a thief. Perhaps this story is for us and shows us how our attitude should be towards the treasury and the money that's put in the treasury. I know that there are many times that people look at the treasury and they say, well, they could have spent that money wiser. They could have spent it on this. I don't like them doing this with that money, or I don't like them doing that with that money. I think they should do this with that money. I have to think about this passage whenever I hear that. That attitude, and I think, are we having the same attitude that Judas had right here? I don't know, it would be good. We must be careful that we don't fall into the same trap as Judas was in. Can you imagine standing before the judgment and being compared to the very one that betrayed Jesus? Can you imagine standing before judgment and the Lord saying, your attitude is exactly like Judas' attitude, because he was a thief and he didn't want to, he thought they should sell that oil, and here you've had the same attitude your whole life in the church, as you don't want to spend the money to fix this or fix that, or even elders can fall into this trap very easily in that they don't want to spend the money, they want to hold on to it, and you think sometimes we may end up in a point where it all comes to a close. And we find that the treasury is full, and we could have spent that money to help. While the poor are hungry, the treasury is full. And we've got to be careful that we don't fall into that same trap. We have to be careful that we don't have that attitude. Well, maybe we could keep this money and do something else with it. Or sometime way down the road, we'll do something with it. We've got to be very careful. Next attitude is going to be from Luke chapter 12. Luke chapter 12, verses 13 through 21, Luke chapter 12, verses 13 through 21. If we turn to Luke chapter 12, it says in verse 13, and one of the company said unto him, Master, speak to my brother that he divide the inheritance with me. And he said unto him, Man, who made me a judge or a divider over you? And he said, Take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth. And he spake a parable unto them, saying, okay, so Jesus turns to them after this guy says, hey, he tells him, speak to my brother that he'll divide the inheritance with me. Jesus says, I'm not a judge over you, but, and he goes into this parable. And he spake this parable saying, the ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself saying, what shall I do? Because I have no room where to bestow my fruits. And he said, this will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater. And there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then whose shall those things be which thou hast provided? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. Now, we've all heard this parable before, and we've looked at it from various different angles, and we know that there are a lot of lessons that can be gleaned from this passage. Jesus tells this story to this man because of his covetous attitude concerning his inheritance. The story is one we're all familiar with. Eat, drink, and be merry. I got it made. Take it easy, eat, drink, and be merry. The eat, drink, and be merry attitude of the rich man is one that's common. But if you notice what the Lord said to him in verse 20, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then whose shall those things be which thou hast provided? Have you ever known someone who lived their whole lives very, very poor, kind of hand to mouth? They just barely get by, live on a very, very meager lifestyle. Then when they die, you find out that they had millions of dollars in the bank. Find that they were extremely, extremely rich. I remember one time my dad told me about a guy that I met, a friend of my dad's. They were this guy was a veteran. He was in the military. He had a Purple Heart. He had a lot of things that problems in his life because of injuries he took on. And I remember my dad telling me, he said that guy, he lives really, really poor. He's got an old beat up truck. Lives in a little shack. He said, you mark my words, when he dies, they're gonna find money in every corner and nook and cranny of that house. The walls are filled with money. He said he saves everything. He doesn't spend anything. He grows his own food. He does everything he can, but he's got money. He's got a lot of money, and he just doesn't spend it. He's kind of a miser. I remember him telling me that, and I also remember when the old man died, his son, who was a grown man, his son was probably in his 60s when the dad died. And I remember the son going down and buying a brand new Corvette. It was very, very easy to see what had happened. This guy had left a lot of money behind. He lived very, very meager all his life. There's people like that. Usually what happens when someone dies and you find that they had a lot of money, their relatives either fight over the money or they take the inheritance and they do the same thing that the person they inherited it from does. They tuck it away. They don't want to spend it. And then they die leaving that behind. It's not bad to have money, and it's not bad to keep our money or to save our money for a rainy day. However, we have to think about that. We leave it behind for someone else. Whose shall those things be which thou hast provided? Whose shall they be, if you think about that? Let me ask another question. Have you ever showed up somewhere unprepared? I'm not talking about not being ready for what to expect, but rather showing up to do a job or a task and not having the necessary equipment or tools or supplies to do that task. Showing up, and I've seen it right here in this congregation. I've seen it with my wife, and Charlie will say, "Hey, we don't have a teacher downstairs." Well, I have nothing to teach. I'm not prepared. I don't have what I need. I don't have what I need in order to teach this class. Sometimes we do that. Imagine standing before the Lord at judgment and having memorized all of the rules of professional football, or all the names of the San Antonio Spurs. I don't know. I know that if I heard a couple of Spurs names, I could probably say, yeah, that's a San Antonio Spur. I don't know how many of them I could recite. I might say a name of a San Antonio Spur, and they say, he got traded 4 years ago. You don't even know what you're talking about. That's just me. But there are people that can recite the names of all the San Antonio Spurs, or famous golfers, or how to score a trophy whitetail. And some can look at a whitetail out there and say, oh, he scores about 160 or whatever. Or they can sit down with a tape measure and score that out. Maybe ballistics of a rifle, or whatever the case may be, gardening, whatever your thing is. There are some people that can do all of that, quote all those things, maybe the words to every song of your favorite artist. Imagine standing before the judgment and being able to recite any one of these things, and yet not being able to quote the books of the Bible, or even being able to recite one significant passage. You've had your whole life as a Christian, and yet we put the Bible, we close it, we put it on the shelf, and we push it aside. Someone says, read this. This is really interesting. You open it, read it, put it, close it back. Or I'm going to read the Bible at once, one verse every day until the end of the year. About February, we say, oh, man, Deuteronomy's tough. It's really just tough going through that. And so it gets set on the shelf. But think of how unprepared we will feel, having built up treasure on earth only to leave it behind and stand before God and account for those things that we've done or not done here. If you're thinking right now, well, you know, he's right. I need to know my Bible better. I'll do that as soon as things loosen up a bit. Right now, I've got a lot of irons in the fire in my life. I'm trying to raise kids. I'm trying to raise a family. I'm working. I'm trying to make a living. I'm struggling right now. As soon as things slow down, perhaps I'll consider the words of the parable. Thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. You think about this. Everything that you ever do, everything that you do in your life right now, from sitting in this pew, I want you to think about the pew you sit in, especially if you sat there this morning or if you've sat there before. I want you to think about this pew. There will come a day. This is the last time you ever sat in that pew. And it could be this one. It could be this day. There's going to come a day when it's the last day that you ever slept in that bed of yours. You look at your spouse, there's going to come a day when it's the last time you ever gave your spouse a kiss. The last goodbye. The last whatever. Everything that we do at one time or another, that's going to be the last time. I read I saw a picture of these kids in a neighborhood from probably taken in the 60s or 70s. These kids all on bicycles, and they're all gathered together for this picture. And as soon as you see it, you think of, man, that looked like my neighborhood when I was a kid. And it said, think about this. One day, you got together with your friends from the neighborhood for the last time and you didn't even know it. Well, using that illustration, one day we're going to gather with a church for the last time and we don't even know it. When we walk out that door and there's somebody, look at our numbers. We were at 120 not just too long ago and they've dropped down. Where'd those other 40 go? Where are they? Are we ever going to see them again? We do not know. Thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Even the sermon that you're hearing now could be your last. We never know. Let's look at some more passages on attitude. This time we'll look at some good attitudes. This perhaps is important, or this is perhaps the incident that caused Ananias and Sapphira to do what they did and to want to give their earnings to the apostles. Acts chapter 4, verses 36 and 37. Acts chapter 4, verses 36 and 37. If we turn to this, we'll understand why Ananias and Sapphira decided to give to the apostles. What made them come with their money to the apostles and lay it there at their feet. It says in Acts chapter 4, verse 36, and Joseph, who by the apostles was surnamed Barnabas, which is being interpreted the son of consolation, a Levite, and of the country of Cyprus, having land, sold it, brought the money, and laid it at the apostles' feet. This man didn't say, you know, I sold my land to give to the church, but I don't know that they're going to do with it what I want. I think I better give it to some poor people myself, and that way I'll feel better about myself having given it to them myself. I think I'm sure God will be just as happy if I do that. And this is an attitude. I'm sure that God would have been happy with him if he would have done that. But why do you suppose this story is in the Bible? We think it is there for us, and so that we can learn how that we're supposed to give. We're not supposed to sell. And I don't know of anybody I've ever met that sold their house and gave all the money to the church. I haven't ever seen that happen in my lifetime. I have seen some people, as I mentioned, they die and they leave behind money, and I've seen that go to the church and get donated to the church, and all of a sudden you get a big payoff. And I know Charlie, as treasurer, has seen many times where an anonymous donor comes in, and he usually knows who it is, but they say, I don't want anybody to know that I'm doing this. And they'll give great amounts to the church. So it does happen. But this is in the Bible for our learning. What if Barnabas and others had just kept the money, gave it away as they seen fit, or just kept their homes that they had worked hard to pay for and to build? Would the work of the church have been able to continue? I don't think so, and this is why we have this example. I think that the first century church needed all the help it could get. And Acts chapter 2 tells us, and they were all with one accord. They all came together, and they gave as the brethren had need. Remember the story of the poor widow, Book of Mark chapter 12. We have here a story of a poor widow. It's called the story of the poor widow because that's exactly what she was. Mark chapter 12, beginning in verse 41 and going through verse 44. Mark chapter 12, verse 41 through 44. It says, and Jesus sat over against the treasury and beheld how the people cast money into the treasury. And many that were rich cast in much. Think about that statement right there. Many that were rich cast in much. The treasury was bringing in a lot of money right there. It cast in much, and there came a certain poor widow, and she threw in two mites, which make a farthing. And he called unto him his disciples, and saith unto them, verily I say unto you, that this poor widow hath cast more in than all they which have cast into the treasury. For all they did cast in of their abundance, but she of her want did cast in all that she had, even her living. I don't know how much a mite is, but I try to figure out how can two mites equal a farthing, and I thought, well, you know, two nickels equal a dime, so I don't know how much she cast in there, but it was something to that nature, you know. Here we have the ultimate example of a good attitude. This widow had an attitude of giving all that she had. This is all I've got, but I'll give it. I want to give to the church what I do have. Do you ever notice that Jesus sat and watched how the people cast in the money? They cast money into the treasury. He's sitting there watching. Do you think he's not watching us today? I mean, it's an interesting thought. I read a story from McHenry's Stories for the Soul. This comes the story of Chad, a shy outcast boy. At the end of the school day, when the other children would walk together, Chad would always be walking alone, and the other kids would be laughing and talking. And here would little Chad would come home to his mother, and she always felt deeply concerned. And even more so when Chad expressed her desire that he wanted to make a Valentine for every child in the class. Valentine's Day is coming up, and I'd like to make a Valentine for everyone in the class. Nevertheless, she purchased all of the supplies for him to fulfill his desire of paper, glue, and crayons, and Chad spent the next couple of weeks making 35 Valentine's cards. On the morning of Valentine's Day, Chad was overflowing with excitement. He carefully collected all the cards and headed out for school. But his mother was not so enthusiastic. She knew that her son might not receive a single Valentine and wondered if he could handle the rejection or if he could handle that level of hurt. To compensate for the pain, she baked his favorite cookies and was going to have them ready and prepared so that when he came home, he would have something to comfort him, because she had this feeling that he wasn't going to get any Valentine's cards. And so that afternoon, the silence was broken by the sound of children walking down the street and laughing and as usual. And the other kids were laughing, and they walked, and there was Chad walking all by himself. She noticed his hands were empty, and tears started to fill her eyes. When the door opened, she choked back emotions and said, "Mommy has some warm cookies and some milk for you." He barely heard a word. His face was glowing and his chest was about to burst with pride. And he said, "Not a one, not one. I didn't forget one. I never forgot a single one." The greatest joy in life is reserved for those who are more interested in giving than receiving. And I read this story and I couldn't help but think about the attitude of this little kid. Even his own mother was worried about how he was going to be hurt. And he was uplifted by his own giving, by his own attitude. One more passage and we'll close. The passage is 2 Samuel chapter 24 and verse 24. 2 Samuel chapter 24 and verse 24. When we think about this, is David. David is a king, a king, and David is goes to buy the threshing floor from King Araunah, and he's going to build an altar as he was commanded and offer a sacrifice to the Lord. And Araunah offered to give David the threshing floor and the oxen and all the instruments of the threshing instruments to use for the wood to burn the sacrifice. And Araunah says, "Take whatever you need." Araunah had this generous attitude. "Take whatever you need. Here it is." Listen to what David said in 2 Samuel 24 and 24. And the king said to Araunah, "Nay, but I will surely buy it of thee at a price. Neither will I offer burnt offerings unto the Lord my God of that which cost me nothing." So David bought the threshing floor and the oxen for 50 shekels of silver. Around the turn of the century, it was common for preachers in the Lord's church to constantly, or not in the Lord's church, but it was common for preachers to constantly ask for money. Preachers all around that, circuit preachers, they were always asking for money. "Look, I got to make a living. You know, anything you can do to help?" And they would take up collections every time they gathered together, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, whatever time they would take up a collection. But because of that, they had that. The preacher of the Lord's church would say, "We're not interested in your money. We don't want your money. We're concerned about saving souls," which is a good thing. They got in the habit of not asking for money, and so it drew a lot of people to them. I like those people. They want to teach the gospel, and they're not asking for money. They don't want their hand. They're not preaching with their hand out all the time. So the opposite came, the extreme. The Lord doesn't need your money, which is true. The Lord doesn't need the money. But think of David's attitude. "Neither will I offer burnt offerings unto the Lord my God of that which doth cost me nothing." This is one lesson we may need to consider seriously when teaching our children about the importance of giving, handing them a dollar to put in the tray or handing them our check to put our check in so they can feel like they're participating, but they're not offering anything of their own. Where David says, I'm not going to offer something that didn't cost me anything. I remember one time when B.J. Clark stood here and he preached a sermon right here in this congregation, and he talked about giving. His parents gave him some money to buy, or his dad gave him some money to buy his mom, I think it was, to buy his mom or buy his sister a present. And he took the money and he spent all but a little bit of it on himself. He gave him a $20 bill or whatever. He spent all but a little bit of it on himself. What he had left over, he had enough money. He went to the store to find. The only thing he could find was an eraser. So he bought the eraser and he gave that as the present. And he ended up getting a lot of trouble for that. And I can't help but think about that story. When I read this, I thought, you know, that's a lot of times what people do. God blesses us and God gives us all that we have. And we turn around and say, okay, here's yours, Lord. Here's two mites, that equals a farthing. Here's two nickels, that equals a dime. I put it in, you know, you saw me put in. Here we go and put it in. We have to be careful when we are teaching our children a lesson on giving. Sometimes we may want to enrich their lives by showing them how to give from the heart and maybe give a certain amount of their allowance, or maybe then they would give of their own money. I read a story of a man who was given a brand new car by his brother. His brother had done well and had accumulated some wealth, and he bought a brand new car for his brother. And the brother noticed that there was this street kid outside admiring his car. And he went out to him, and the boy said, "Is this your car, mister?" The man said, "Yes, my brother gave this to me for Christmas." And the little boy said, "I wish I had," and the man just knew that the boy was going to say, I wish I had a brother like that. But instead the boy said, "I wish I could be a brother like that." What a great attitude. What a great attitude that is. It's no wonder why the Lord said in Mark chapter 10 and verse 14, "Suffer the little children to come unto me, for such, and forbid them not, for such is the kingdom of God." How's your attitude tonight? How is your attitude today towards our giving, towards our brethren, towards fellow Christians, towards our attendance? Sometimes we have a bad attitude even toward those who don't attend. Why can't they come? They're home. They got plenty to do. What they got as much. We shouldn't even have that attitude. We appreciate that when people are here, but we need to be careful that we don't take the opposite and have a bad attitude toward those that don't come, or even toward those that come. Perhaps you think it's your attitude is great, but haven't considered that maybe it's no better than some of the examples in the Bible illustrations that we just saw. We just never have stopped to consider that maybe my attitude is as bad as theirs. I know that many times we look at those things and we think, he must be talking to someone else. I don't know how many times I have spoken something from the pulpit and said something from the pulpit only to see somebody nudge their husband, wives elbow their husbands, or husbands elbow their wives, or someone turn around and look, I know exactly who he's talking to. Apparently you didn't. And we got to be careful with that. So if we want to be part of God's kingdom, we must be careful that we have the right attitude, lest we stand before a judgment, feeling unprepared and ashamed, only to hear the words, "Depart from me, that work iniquity." We have to be careful with that. Attitude is something that we all need to work on. I'm not saying that God needs to give us an attitude adjustment, but you think about the people that He gave an attitude adjustment to in the Scriptures, and be glad that He doesn't offer us the same attitude adjustments. He gives us opportunity to change on our own. We need to take full advantage of that. If you have any need, the message is yours. Won't you come while together we stand and sing the song that's been selected.
There's a fountain free, 'tis for you.